Hello?
Hi, Dr. John. This is Ben Jackson here. How are you?
Hi, good. That's an
Excellent.
interesting system that you've got there.
Yeah, this is the first time I've tried this out, so thank you for your patience on it. But we're running through Anchor's little kind of extra part of the app to do interviews, nice and simply just via the phone. So hopefully with little or to no editing or kind of faffing around too much. So yeah, so far so good. We seem to be all right and connecting okay. And you can hear me
Well,
well enough, I hope.
maybe we can put a disclaimer at the front that if I end up sounding stupid, that it's the technology that you're using for the first time and not me.
Exactly what I'll do. I'll put it at the very beginning to explain that we're both learning as we go. But look, I want to say thank you for making the time, first off, to
Sure.
spend some time and have a chat and go through some stuff. I've been fascinated with your work and looking through your website and all the details on there. Because
Oh, thank you.
we're in very, very similar fields, from slightly different angles, but I think we kind of seem to be pivoting on the same points, which has been fascinating to read, and some wonderfully written articles, just fascinating to go through. And what I want to talk about today is kind of picking some of those bits apart. And what I hope to achieve is that we can kind of give the listeners kind of as much value, some real action points they can take away that, that's real things that's tangible, not just kind of theories and ideas, but what can they do today, tomorrow, which I know you're kind of keen for reading through your articles about, try this and do this. So hopefully that's going to be something you're going to be keen to go for. But maybe first, if you could let the audience know and let our listeners know kind of a bit about yourself, your background, what you do professionally, and as parents, so let them know who you are.
Okay, sure. So my name is Dr. John Rich. I'm an educational psychologist, which is basically primarily a research degree focused on teaching and learning. But there's a heavy element to developmental psychology and just basic types of psychology with children and how to interact with children and things like that. I got my PhD at Temple in Philadelphia and as a professor of psychology at Delaware State University.
Excellent, excellent. And so you, but you obviously, that's your professional side, but you're a father of two, is that right?
Yes, I have two boys. One of them is about to be 14. The other one is 12. And I have a lovely wife as well. So we all live here in Delaware. I'm an avid tennis player. If you're looking
Oh,
for
wow, fantastic.
things about me that are, on a more personal side, tennis is my favorite form of exercise.
Fantastic.
And we're also looking forward to the beginning of the American football season.
Oh, that's approaching, is it? I'm sorry, this is
Yeah.
not my time zone, so I just can't go without a good excuse. But that's coming up for you, is it then?
Yeah, a couple more weeks. So then
Oh, okay.
professional football starts, and my son, who is about to start playing for his high school football team, is particularly excited. So
Yeah, I was going to say,
that's
that's going to be
one.
exciting stuff.
Yeah, his first game is this Friday.
Oh, wow. So that really is soon. Well, good luck that he has a good time and he plays and enjoys himself doing that. It's fantastic. So what I was talking about, I think we obviously exchanged some emails back and forth, and I think one of the themes that I find fascinating, I don't know if you get this on a regular basis, it is a kind of, and it feels like it's a small thing, but it can just elevate into a large thing. It's about disciplining and punishment and ways that we try to do that in a positive way. In a way that gets the kind of results we want in a way that possibly aren't the traditional ways. Now, I know you're an advocate, as I am, in terms of nonviolent ways to inform children of behavior that's normally not the most useful, shall we say. But you've written quite a bit about that in terms of how to do it. Now, I think a lot of parents do struggle, and I count myself as the one where finding ways to positively parent a child and to kind of, as you say, kind of focus on the learning that they need to come from, which I know you've written about on your website, that's the goal. But sometimes how we get to that can be through some really kind of not great means. We can shout at our kids, that kind of the level of raising our voices, getting aggressive with our voices is the channel we use to get that message across. But the result is the child, it can come across quite negative. But you've got some fantastic suggestions about alternative ways of getting that message or that information, that learning to the child across. Could you explain some of your thoughts on that at all, please?
Sure, that's a good setup. And I've been pretty amazed that I've been an academic researcher for a while and I've published a lot. And when you write about issues like this, this is just kind of something that most academic researchers would agree with. There's not really anything to say about it. But now that I'm writing for non-academic people, I've been amazed how controversial the anti-spanking perspective seems to be among some circles.
Yes, you mentioned from the email. I mean, I think that's, I felt from the UK that that seemed to be, from my experience and working with my clients, that is not, it's that non-violence is the norm. The spanking side is something more unusual. But for you expressed on the other side of the pond, as it were, that you're kind of getting some resistance against that.
Yeah, well, and I think from the little bit, it's made me curious, and so the little bit of research I've done in it, I think that there might be some kind of correlation with economic class. It seems like people who come from backgrounds where there is less money seem to be more inclined to use spanking as one of the techniques that they have in their arsenal, so to speak, and I use that word intentionally, since arsenal is also a violent word. So, and you know, it's even gotten to the point where sometimes I'll write something about not spanking your children and what you could do instead, and there, as men in particular, American men, I've had accusations that my kids are spoiled, and this is what's wrong with American society, is that we've got all these entitled children, and that my children are, my two sons are probably going to end up being gay because I don't spank them, which is an odd leap there. So it causes you to wonder, well, what happens if you don't spank your daughter? Does she become a lesbian?
You've got to throw if there's logic there, you follow the logical pattern and it kind of degrades quite quickly.
Right. What happens? I don't know how heterosexuality has anything to do with your parents laying their hands on you and causing you physical pain, but that's something that's that a comment that I've heard a number of times. Anyway, so I haven't answered your question. I continue to become amazed at the degree to which this is a controversial opinion, but what I like to do in, when I write about it on the site, is I like to focus less on the ethical reasons not to spank your children, and there are many, and you know, that's one of the primary reasons that my wife and I haven't spanked our children, is for ethical reasons. But to get off of the ethical piece and focus on the effectiveness that the research tends to show, that when you use punishment, especially corporal punishment, that in the long term, the child doesn't, the behavior doesn't change. That what a child is motivated to do when you use spanking is not to try to figure out what the big moral lesson is about their behavior, and then they decide, I'm not going to do that behavior anymore because now I understand that I shouldn't do that. Instead, the motivation is, the next time I want to do that, what did I do wrong last time to get caught?
Yeah, so how do I avoid the punishment in some form? How do I get around that in some way?
So if the goal of parenting, for me, the big goal of parenting is to teach a child how to act, that a child is born with no social skills whatsoever. They don't understand anything because they're brand new to the world. And so we need to raise them to be able to be successful, productive members of society. And part of that is teaching them values and which behaviors are appropriate and inappropriate. And so if you just look at the data on using particularly corporal punishment, if your goal is to teach your child how to act, and the result of using corporal punishment is that the behavior is just going to end up reappearing in a more sneaky fashion, well, then that doesn't achieve the goal.
Yes.
So going a little bit further, what I would say is that most of the time, a spanking does not provide the child with any information about what they should be doing if they're in the same circumstance again.
Well, that's so here's information. What information are they giving them from the future, as it were? Yeah.
Exactly, right. So if we're trying to teach a child to cope, for example, with frustration, let's say that we have little Benjamin who is frustrated because his brother took his toy, and so he lashes out and hits his brother in the face or pushes him or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, certainly that child needs to receive some form of discipline for that behavior. They need to know that that's not something that we want them to do again. But the child said, I was feeling frustrated. My first instinct was to express my frustration through violence.
Yeah.
And for me, if the decision that you make as a parent is to then use violence to teach them that they shouldn't be violent, well, you've not only contradicted your message, but you also haven't told the child, well, what should you do next time that you get frustrated? What are some things
a heinous error to go down and kind of fight fire with fire, literally discipline aggression with aggression. There is no message. There's no information carried at all. And as a parent, you just don't understand. You're not engaging with what's going on behind that. Because, I mean, if you disagree, but we have a division between emotion, the emotion of how what they feel like, and the behavior resulting from that emotion. And if we understand what is the emotions having behind there, well, we can work with something. You know, you can actually understand and unpack it into the book with the child and say, well, there's some alternative ways of managing that feeling or understanding that feeling a bit more. But if you just focus on the behavior, you're just kind of like, you're not getting to the root of the issue. Or really, as you said before, helping the child understand what they're feeling. I mean, I think you mentioned some of your articles, and I mentioned again, is that children don't know, they can't label their feelings. It's not we get pre-born with all the feelings labeled up in advance. What is guilty for you is not guilty for me, or what anger for you is not anger for me. And we need to help our children, I think that you will navigate that emotional swamp in a way to then more appropriately put the kind of the feelings towards it, and then find the best responses for those feelings. And it's about kind of refining that elegance of understanding, but often with that kind of, say, corporal punishment or verbal abuse by shouting, we kind of just kind of jump that whole process and just dive into the behavior of the child and try and shake it out of them or disrupt them in some form. But we don't actually attend to, well, how did we get to that point? What's happened there? What's the child experiencing? What can we do to help them? That can be the area which is the biggest amount of change, the potential for the child to understand what's happening, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that even we adults are struggling with all the time. You go into work and your boss is upset about something and berates you in front of your coworkers. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, that creates a feeling of resentment. It doesn't, if you're at all motivated to do a better job next time, it's not because you're honoring what your boss just did. It's because you're trying to protect your job.
Yeah.
But then even beyond that, if your boss berates you in front of other people, you can't then turn around and berate your boss back or you're going to lose your position. People, adults, continue to need to express their frustrations in other ways or to get in touch with their emotions in ways that don't jeopardize them or lead them into criminal activity or something like that. Freud. Oh, go ahead. All right, go ahead. There's just your comments are so well founded that as you're talking, I'm thinking of five things that I want to make sure I say.
Fine. No, that's okay. Well, I'm sure that all the most important ones will just kind of pop up as they need to. I mean, it comes back to that point about, you know, again, back to your articles, when we wrote so eloquently about, it was about effectively how we model ourselves to the children. It's about understanding that. I think you wrote about it in your article very clearly about when we fully become, entered adulthood is when we become parents. I think I paraphrase your sentence, but it was along the lines of that. And it's about, we have to now recognize that all our movements, all our actions are now the information superhighway for our baby.
That's
their internet, isn't it? Now, literally, it's their consumption of information is through our micro muscle movements, through our little gestures, through our voices, through our intonation. It's literally their way of interpreting the world around them is through us. So what we model, what we model as behavior is so much about their, how they then choose to. And this obviously, I think it's very well-worn ground in terms of understanding that what children see on a regular basis becomes their pattern of behavior. But it also, that does include how we as parents deal with problems or frustrations, and accept defeats. I mean, all those things, and that's how the child will see how to handle those things. So, you know, I've met parents and families where, you know, that the child is using language, which I would offer is probably inappropriate for that age, but they've been exposed to it by the parent. On, you know, through, say, for example, road rage. They've gone out, the parents, you know, been verbally abusive to another road driver for whatever reason, and all that language is now part of, and the child sees that as being the way to respond to being upset over something, kind of what we mentioned before. But now they've got the language there, and it's like, this is what we model on a regular basis, what they're becoming. So this language becomes part of their thinking. These responses
about certainly,
their actions.
If you hear your child speaking in a way that you don't like, the answer to where did they learn that usually right in front of your face.
No, absolutely. And I think I think when I work with clients, it's not about kind of not, I'm not telling anyone off, but it's bringing to everyone's attention or anything I've written. We are being modeled all the time at such a deep level we don't realize. It's not simply just the large gestures the kids notice. It's back to the small ones. And I'll badly paraphrase, but I think it's the quote is along the lines that for our children, the smallest things to them, well, the smallest things to us, they've got a Lego or a toy or a drawing they want to show us. You know, that may seem like nothing to us or a few seconds of our time, but for them, it's their entire world. Entire world. And it's there that all that effort, all that passion is put into that moment, and they're giving it to you to look at. And we can be dismissive. We can say, oh, I'll look at it later, or in 5 minutes, or oh, yeah, whatever. But if they can see that we appreciate these little things, then they understand that later in life they can trust us with the larger things, because right now these small things, this Lego, this drawing, are their large things. And it's about that interaction and realizing that we have a responsibility to that. What you do with that
is
individual, isn't it? I mean, that's as you say, that's pointing to the ethical, moral version of how you parent, and that's individual to everyone. That's not prescriptive, and I think we agree that it's you parent the way that's right for you. But at the end of the day, there's a consensus of knowing that, you know, children will respond to how you see the world. And that was kind of my overall point there.
Yeah, and it reminds me of, I've got two articles that are in the pipeline to be posted, and one of them is talking about just setting, like putting your phone down or turning it off or setting aside time to intentionally bond with your child.
Intentionally bond, that's the thing, exactly so, isn't it? With intention to do these things.
Right, intentionally bonding. And then on the other side, you say, well, I'll show you something you can't say in 5 minutes, but you might need to say 5 minutes because, like right now, if my son comes down and wants to show me his drawing, I'm on this conversation with you. I probably will tell him, let me look at it when I'm finished. But then
good point.
The other article that I'm going to write about is that it's perfectly okay to apologize to your child. Like if you find yourself raising your voice because you were frustrated because your boss berated you, and when you came home, you projected that onto your family or something. I think part of the teaching that we're responsible for is not to be perfect all the time, but to recognize when we stepped across some kind of line and then intentionally sit the child down and say, you know, earlier such and so happened, and the way I talk to you is not really, I'm not proud of myself for doing that. And so I wanted to apologize. So do you understand that?
Yeah. And there's a lesson inside that as well, I think, if you agree with me, that it's the child seeing you admit, I got it wrong. I think there's so much power in that acknowledgement that the child sees in terms of them being on, in terms of their own honesty about when they think, hey, do you know what? Yeah, fair play. I made a mistake there as well. I think them seeing you stepping down from that pedestal of being a parent, saying, I'm still human. I think there's quite powerful lessons in there. And I've experienced my son. I know I've been upset with my children who weren't going to bed at the right time or were disruptive at night times. And I'd explained that I was tired and needed some downtime. And I did shout, raise my voice with my son. And I gave him some sort of explanation the next morning. And I apologized. I said, look, by the way, I need to apologize for that. I look back and I'm not happy with how I was about that. I could have done that better. And the reasons are here and here and here. That's not saying your behavior at the time was what I needed, but it's acknowledging that my response could have been better. And I just remember a good lesson.
Right. And it's a matter of like going beyond just I'm the boss and you're the kid and you do what I say. But to just look for, you know, a lot of parenting coaches and psychologists would say that there's a lot more teaching that you can do with your kid when there's a mistake or a behavior that needs to be corrected than when they're doing something right. Because doing something right, you can say, hey, let's go get some ice cream, or that was really good, I'm really proud of you. But the opportunity to learn from our mistakes is something that, I mean, even adults need to keep that in mind.
But that's the underlying, and that's what I mean. Yeah, go on. All I'm saying is that's the underlying point behind resilience, which is something very common in the UK in terms of we're pushing into the schools and helping children really get a handle on, understand that there is failure in life, but it's sometimes the failure can lead to success. And it's a really noticing that we shouldn't be judged on one single individual act, but in fact it's multiple things can happen, and you know it can be five things which don't work out but arrive at the success of where they want to get. And it's about that resilience level, and as you say, realizing that, discussing, accepting failures happen or things don't work out the way it's intrinsic ability to kind of have that mental well-being. For me at least, I feel it's been, you know, being received well with my clients, is that mental well-being by having that resilience in place, accepting things don't always work out and finding solutions, recognizing
that's
that
there
are things to improve.
Yeah, that's truly teaching your child how to become an adult, because adults are having to do that all the time too. You know, we make some mistakes. And I think to loop back to the pro-spanking cohort, think that the part of the issue there is that they're under the impression that the relationship that you're supposed to have with your kid is that they listen to you and you don't need to explain anything to them. And spoiled children come from sparing the rod. But I think spoiled children come from not spending the amount of time that's necessary to do the hard work of you, of being a parent and a teacher at the same time, with kindness and empathy and warmth to lead them to the lessons that they need to learn. Spanking is very quick. You don't need to spend a lot of time when you're spanking.
No.
It's this other stuff that takes, that's the real effort right there.
And that's so true. I mean, and what I was going to say about that is that, you know, it doesn't take much, and I don't want to throw it down another road particularly, but I think, be honest here, when a parent spanks or hits out at a child or anyone particularly, it's not the behavior. They're not doing it for the child. They're not doing it for the behavior. They're doing it for themselves. It's their frustration. It's their issues. Whatever's going on inside them. I think you mentioned about the whatever it means to them is how they respond to it. And it, obviously, if a disrespectful means, you know, being rude means disrespectful, which equals being hit, then that's the cycle they go through, a pattern, and then boom, that's where they respond. But it's all to do with the parent at that point. They're not doing it for the child. They're not thinking, this is the best thing for the kid. Whack. That's not what they're thinking. They're thinking, this is the best thing for me because I'm just overwhelmed with frustration and anger or whatever it may be, and then I hit. So at that point, they're not even thinking this is the best thing. They're thinking this is the best thing for me to get my child to understand. And then the self needs the most education from that particular point.
Yeah.
So bearing on with your time and so on, what, let's get something really kind of valuable for the audience here. What I find is that we can all get in that zone where maybe not the red mist so much, but we get ourselves worked up. How does a parent kind of step in between that point, that can like that filter, that junction point, put a kind of stop sign in their head between their traditional behavior? Because obviously we've got people listening in who would be experiencing some of these frustrations, but want to know something practical they can put in place to change that behavior. What's a few things they could start doing like today that would make a difference, do you think?
Okay, well, so a couple of my articles are trying to walk people through thinking about the parenting that they received when they were younger. And sometimes when people say that there's nothing wrong with spanking because I was spanked and I turned out okay. Well, first of all, I don't know that you turned out okay, because usually these are anonymous people
by
on the internet.
Definition. Yes, of course. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Secondly, that doesn't mean that you couldn't have turned out with some improvements if your parents used other techniques. But even if that's the case, I think that it's important for people to reflect on the parenting they received, because just like you said earlier, that the children are watching their parents and their parents are the models for how you're supposed to act. And so when you get older and your own kids push your buttons, the first reaction that you're going to have, if you're not being intentional about it, is to just do what your parents did with you. And so it's okay after you're an adult to say out loud that my parents did a pretty good job with this, this, and this, but there are these areas where the way they handled things is not the way I want to handle them. And so,
a bit of
for
reflection
me,
first off, to say,
reflection. Yes.
I was saying, your reflection. So, say, so actually, take a moment, some time, just reflect back on what you remember as being the punishment your parents gave you, and then look at if that worked or not. Is that the way to say that we should look at that initially? Just that first step.
Did it work? Is it something that I want to do with my child? I mean, just kind of bringing things out into the open and thinking more consciously about them. So, you know, I'm a psychologist, and so as a psychologist, the thing that I believe more than anything is that if you bring the stuff that's back in the residual parts of your mind up to the front of your brain where you can talk about it and think about it in a conscious fashion, that you take some of the power of those things away to influence you. And so,
I completely agree, 1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be the first thing that I would say, is that if it's okay to plug my site, and if you go to the site and you find.
Please do. Absolutely. Yeah. DrRich.com.
That's okay.
Is what we're looking at here. So that's where we should be.
Right.
Go to DrRich.com for all that information, articles there. They can read up some bit more. But yeah, carrying what you were saying. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have two articles in particular that have the word parenting toolbox in them. One is about rewards, and the other one is about nonviolent punishments. And as those rather long articles unfold, there are places where I ask you to stop reading and then write down some reflections. And some of those reflections have to do with how did your parents respond in certain kinds of situations? And now that you're thinking about it, is there a better way so that you can have your own thoughts in mind? Another thing that I would say is there's a lot of research that says that if a child is brought up in a home with two people who are happy to be together, that produces better outcomes as a whole than if there's only one caregiver there. And one of the reasons for that is because if you have two caregivers and one of them is getting frustrated or upset, this has happened with me. For whatever reason, I get a little bit set off when my kids are having trouble understanding math. I don't know what the reason for that is. I'm really good at math. And so when they're doing their math and they're hitting a wall, I can feel myself getting frustrated and upset. And so when that happens, I've learned to say to my wife, I need you to take over the homework. And I don't say anything, but I go and I leave the room so that it doesn't turn into some kind of thing where I'm going to regret how I ended up responding.
There's just something in there for a second, just kind of get that in place with this room and hear and they're clear about it. It's when you notice that kind of like overwhelm coming into, as you notice the stages that kicking in, timing out, taking it some, give me 5 minutes, give me some few seconds. And this, I think obviously that works with you with, you know, having, you know, if both parents are around, that you can tag out, as it were, or tap out, that you can do that.
Right.
Obviously, even with single parents, the ability of the caregivers, you are able to obviously tell that child, give me a minute, 2 minutes, just to walk out of the room and then come back. So it's the same process, but the point is walking away from the environment, if you find it getting frustrating for you, finding a period or place to just settle your thoughts, settle your feelings, and then return. I guess I'm slightly more focused on the single parenting there, but obviously with coming from a couple or having both parents there, then the other parent can swoop in and pick up the homework or the math or it may be there. Okay, excellent. Yeah.
And you know what's great about that is
to
remember...
Not push through. Yeah.
I was going to say, remember little Benjamin who got frustrated and hit his brother. And I said, if you just spank him and walk away, Benjamin doesn't learn what he's supposed to do next time. Well, we've also talked about modeling. And if your child sees that when you're getting frustrated, you give yourself a timeout, that's a very powerful way to say everybody's going to get frustrated throughout their entire life by different things. And you need to do what psychologists call emotional regulation, to be able to take your emotions and notice what's happening and then pull yourself back together. And so you're modeling for your children how to handle those kinds of situations.
That's exactly it. And as you say, how the child sees that is a way of thinking, oh, right, that's how I'll handle frustration potentially in the future, which is you acknowledge the emotion. And I think that's him mentioned before. It's about recognizing there is an emotion behind it. Recognize it. Bring it up to the conscious level. Recognize the emotion there. Oh, I see it. See what it's like. And then you go, okay, now what's my action based over that? So you've got that in place. You've got the idea of stepping away for a moment for whatever time you can. And you also got about recognizing what maybe you were brought up on in terms of punishment. Is there anything else you could say to any parents who need that final bit of advice which would help them kind of like deal with it? I can give you a scenario and you can say this is going to work for you or not. So there's, say it's a single parent I've worked with in the past, and the son is continually demanding attention, always invading any kind of phone calls or space or time to get the parent's attention to do more things, and will then resort to maybe kind of more baby language, being screaming and loud and in all forms demanding attention. And whilst the parent is saying, give me some time, give me a minute, it's not really working. And the parent's level of frustration is increasing. And they're beginning to, and so I'll get to in a second, the point is they're beginning to kind of like say, well, if you don't start calming down, then I won't do X for you. And yet they don't. The parent doesn't kind of follow through on those. Well, how important do you find it is to be consistent when it comes to laying conditions down of behavior, shall we say?
Oh, absolutely. One of the articles that I create a fake scenario similar to yours, where the child gets up from the dinner table and leaves all of her stuff on the table, and then the parent says, you need to put your plate back, and the child walks away. And then you follow and you say, if you don't put that plate back, you're going to your room. It was that we were at a party. If you don't put your plate back, that's the right thing to do. Then we're going to leave the party. The parent doesn't want to leave the party.
Yeah.
And so when the child walks away again, the parent puts the plate away because she's not willing to follow through on the threat. There's like three parts that I would say to, if I'm going to give concrete advice. The first that I already talked about is,
as we were after,
identify. Identify your own parenting and how you want to improve upon it. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I would say under the rubric of, there's emotions are not wrong. It's what you do with those emotions after you've already started to feel them. That would be a second thing. But then the third thing, I think, in the situation that you've given me, I might say, why don't you tell the child, listen, I have to get on the phone. I'm going to be on the phone for 15 minutes, and I would really appreciate it if you allowed me to be on the phone for that period of time. I'm going to set a timer up so that you can watch the time tick away. And I promise you that when I get to the end of the 15 minutes, I'm going to wrap my phone call up, and then we'll go and sit outside and play, throw the ball back and forth or something like that. And so give the child an end to the pain that they're feeling that the mother isn't giving attention. Something like that. But I would say if you give a threatening punishment and then you don't follow through, then the child knows the next time you give a threatening punishment, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, there's a cascading effect. I was thinking of the same example. I've seen it in supermarkets, is where the mum's there, or her parents there, shall we say, trolley full of food, child's crying, and the mum says, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to leave the supermarket. Realistically, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
Seriously, you're not going to leave your whole week's shop in a trolley. And and at a young age, the kids are learning it. And as you say, those points are, it's about if you continue to fall back and don't follow through on what you said, do you continue to undermine the child's trust? And I think, probably for another conversation, how the scaffolding that children need in their lives, trust is so important there, in terms of they know that the parent will deliver on certain things. So that's, you know, but thank you for that. That's great. I mean, I think time-wise, I was going to kind of just bring it to a close at this particular point. So I know you're a busy man, things are going, you've got eclipses to watch in the US. So I think things are happening over there.
Right, that's true,
So where can people get hold of you? Are you just on the blog there? Or you have any? Are you on Instagram or anything like that that people can like and connect with you there at all?
Yeah, I do have a contact link on the website. The website's drjohnrich.com. You don't spell out the word doctor, so it's drjohnrich. Yeah, drjohnrich.com. And I have an email address where you can reach me. It's just info@drjohnrich.com. I'm still kind of playing around with where I'm going with the site, to be honest with you. I've been really enjoying the writing.
Definitely.
I guess I've been wanting to write a book about parenting for a long time. And anytime I sat down to try to start writing my 200-page book, I would always find something else to do because that's such a mammoth task. So I came up with the bright idea that if I started a site, I could write my book 1,000 words at a time, and by the end of a year, I would end up with the book that I wanted to write. So that's the one thing. I've also thought about the possibility of going into the coaching arena, although I don't really know what's involved in that exactly. So I'm really just kind of organically writing what I think is important to say and letting just life unfold, and whatever ends up happening is how it unfolded, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, certainly, I mean, you go through your website, all the articles on there are fascinating reading. I fully support and suggest that people go and check those out there and sign up to your blog and get, as you've got a free guide on there, the top 7 positive parenting tips. Get the email
in
there and get more advice from there.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a great thing to do. Okay. Well, look, John, thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
I think, personally, we could have gone for a lot longer about all these subjects.
So
maybe we can spend some more time into September, October, and maybe we'll get a few more subjects from there, and we'll have a bigger conversation maybe, because I think this is a rolling thing. But again, thank you so much for your time. And remember, drjohnrich.com, go and check it out, read the articles. It's a wealth of wonderful information. Highly recommend it. And Dr. John, I will speak to you very soon. You take care and have a great rest of your day.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
You take care. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.